I am Mary Spashotti. The court is aware that I've come up here maybe too often, who has been representing the petitioner with respect to a motion to reopen his removal case, alleging that his counsel was ineffective in filing a proper application for cancellation of removal. The issues here are whether there is jurisdiction, as the respondent contends there is not, to review the board's denial of petitioner's motion to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel. The other issue in this case is whether there is jurisdiction to review the board's denial of the motion to reconsider that was filed to address a factual error committed by the board as to when the attorney-client relationship commenced. Petitioner respondent says that that issue involves a discretionary decision and there is no judicial review. The respondent has cited a number of decisions, a line of cases in this court, Kukana, Huang, Johnson, Jezerski, which are recent decisions that propose to limit judicial review of motions to reopen where even where claims of ineffective assistance of counsel are raised and motions to reconsider. The logic of these court's decisions is that these are essentially discretionary decisions because the regulations created by the board make them discretionary, and therefore judicial review is foreclosed under Section 1252A2B, Roman numeral 2. Petitioner contends that the cases cited by the respondent don't apply in this case. The reason being is that this isn't a situation involving the flip of a coin as to whether the motion to reopen should be granted or not. It wasn't a decision that found that there was ineffective assistance of counsel, but nonetheless there was no prejudice. That would be a discretionary decision in my view. That wasn't this case. Congress did not, in creating the statute in IRA, that allowed for motions to reopen and motions to reconsider, did not preclude judicial review of such motions. What it did do, however, is put reasonable time limits, 90 days in the case of a motion to reopen, 30 days in the case of a motion to reconsider. It did not specifically state that decisions regarding these motions were not subject to review, and there was a good reason for that. Because, as the Supreme Court in Dada versus Mukasey held, we have to safeguard the right of reopening. The Supreme Court thinks that the right to reopen a case in the immigration context is sufficiently important that it should be preserved. And this is what I bring to the court today. This court also has concerned itself, however, with situations in which such decisions are not discretionary. Perhaps an error of law. Perhaps a failure to follow its own precedent. There are a number of arenas in which such decisions, according to the court, are not discretionary. Here is a situation in which petitioner, who is a man of very little education, relied on his former counsel to present a case of cancellation of removal. What followed from counsel was a pitiful, horrendous, in my opinion, application for cancellation removal that didn't even begin to meet the statutory requirements for that relief, which would have been 10 years of continuous physical presence, good moral character, and extreme hardship. In fact, Judge Giambastiani found that there wasn't any evidence of extreme hardship. There were no medical issues. But yes, there were medical issues, as the motion to reopen clearly showed by an amended application for cancellation removal and tons of evidence going back to the time when petitioner's former attorney was retained. Petitioner himself had been operated for glaucoma, was nearly sightless in one eye, and the other eye was in jeopardy. His two infant children had chronic asthma conditions, pneumonia, things that would make any child be unable to adjust to life in Mexico. The board had in front of it cancellation application number one, cancellation application number two. One had over 30 exhibits. This one had maybe 15 pages. Unfortunately, because of the haste to put the case together in a reasonable time to show diligence, There were certain errors that were made in the affidavits. One page of an affidavit was missing. But nonetheless, there was enough evidence that the board had, including the entire transcript of the proceedings, from which it could conclude that this was a case that was just simply thrown together to buy time. And in fact, in response to the ARDC's investigation, the attorney said, "I bought time," and that's what his client was supposed to have. He didn't tell his client that he did so. He was just going through the motions. He was taking up the judge's time. He was taking up the time of the Board of Immigration Appeals by filing such a frivolously poor application for cancellation and removal. No, his client didn't know that. How would he know? He can barely read. The board...
In these cases, there is really no right to counsel. That's correct, isn't it?
Of course there's no right to counsel, not a constitutional one.
All right, so if there's no right to counsel, are you almost required in one of these cases where you're arguing ineffective assistance to show that he was worse off with a lawyer than he would have been without one?
He was no better off than if he had represented himself.
Well, that's...
And he was an uneducated man who could have had visual problems. His lawyer, on the other hand, was educated and had two good eyes. If he had the skills or the desire to put a good case together, he could have done that, and it would have been a winnable case, in my estimation. The board, however, said the error that the board committed was that it said that the attorney-client relationship didn't start at the hearing level. It started when the appeal was filed. And in doing that, it went against all the evidence of record, the transcript of the proceedings, which was presented to the board, in which the questioning of the petitioner was so feeble and so ridiculous that perhaps the whole hearing took 45 minutes at most. The board instead ignored that, and that is a serious error, because when does an attorney-client relationship begin for purpose of determining whether there was a fair hearing? Yes, there is no right to counsel in the Fifth Amendment sense, although Judge Scalia says there is a Fifth Amendment right to counsel. And one or two cases of this court have suggested that, and a ton of other cases in other circuits have suggested that. To take it at its narrowest, there's a right to have a fair opportunity to present your case. If you don't have a right to an attorney, but you have a statutory right to be represented by counsel, where are you going to complain that whomever you picked wasn't good enough? Well, the answer is, this is a civil case. He can file a lawsuit for malpractice. The problem is that by the time we know that there has been ineffective assistance of counsel, the alien has been removed from the United States, is barred from returning for 10 years, and how is he going to pursue a malpractice case against his attorney in the United States? That's what differentiates immigration cases from all other civil cases when it comes to ineffective assistance of counsel, because of what is at issue is expulsion from the United States. And since the statute of limitations for ineffective assistance of counsel is 1 or 2 years, as far as I understand it, and the bar to removal and returning to the United States is 10, and in some cases 20 years, it's obvious that there is no remedy for ineffective assistance of counsel unless the courts and the Congress decide that there is one.
What is our present case law that stands in the way of this appeal, as far as you're concerned?
I didn't hear, sir.
Our present case law, they talk about Kukana and others, about no jurisdiction and discretionary decision, which I guess, in your view, this is a discretionary decision, but has some other wrinkle to it that
well,
our
I can
precedent
cite,
doesn't apply, I guess.
I can cite why it doesn't apply in a portion of Jazursky. This court has said that there is a difference between an issue and a remedy. Having created a reopening remedy that can defeat removal, the government cannot be allowed to destroy the remedy and so ensure removal by creating procedural roadblocks and so that prevent the alien from invoking the procedure. That would be a deprivation of liberty without due process of law, and therefore judicially reviewable, even if the petition for review did not present a question of law, but merely a question of fact, such as whether the notice of hearing had been sent to the alien. Because the statute governing judicial review of rulings by the Board of Immigration Appeals allow review of a discretionary ruling that is claimed to deny a constitutional right. And what we have consistently have stated in this case is that he was denied a fair opportunity to show a good case for cancellation and removal. If his attorney had presented a good case for cancellation and removal, we wouldn't be here today. The distinction, in Jezerski, the court went on to state, a distinction between a question of fact on which a right depends and a question of law is vital in a case such as this, in which the infringement of a constitutional right is not alleged. Because it's not alleged, our review is limited to rulings of law. And as we held in Kukana and Wang, a factual determination by the board, such as its determination that the alleged incompetence of the alien's lawyer in the removal proceeding did not prejudice the alien, is not a legal ruling and does not confer this jurisdiction on us. The board didn't decide the question of prejudice. The board didn't decide the question of ineffectiveness. The board said he wasn't diligent at the start of the attorney-client relationship, which was the appeal, to inquire from his attorney as to the status of his case.
Your time has expired.
I'll save my comments for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, my name is Lauren Bassett, and I represent the respondent, the United States Attorney General. Pursuant to this Court's recent case law, the Court lacks jurisdiction to review the petitioner's untimely motion to reopen and subsequent motion to reconsider because those were discretionary denials by the Board, and the petitioner has not raised any legal questions or constitutional claims for this court to review. In Kukana, the court laid out that it lacked jurisdiction to review motions to reopen, applying the jurisdictional bar at INA section 242A2B(2), saying that that bars review of discretionary determinations and that a motion to reopen would be a discretionary determination falling in that bar. The safeguard to this is section 242A2D that does allow review of legal questions and constitutional claims, but the petitioner has not presented any here. And this reasoning has been extended by this court in several cases since then, and particularly has been extended to motions to reconsider in Johnson versus McKaysey. By way of background, the petitioner was in removal proceedings, applied for cancellation of removal. The immigration judge denied cancellation on the discretionary bar, saying he didn't meet extreme and exceptional hardship. Then the board affirmed that decision in 2005. The petitioner's former attorney was handling the case. The board, there are no legal questions, but just to clear up the factual issues that the petitioner is raising, the board did not misinterpret or get wrong when the attorney was hired. It was very clear that the former attorney was the attorney before the immigration judge and before the board. The statement in the board's decision just says that the petitioner hired this attorney to file the appeal to the board, not saying he didn't have him before, but that this attorney was handling the initial appeal to the board. At that point, the 2 years passed, and then the petitioner filed the untimely motion to reopen. So the board said that the petitioner had not acted with due diligence. The board to warrant equitable tolling of the timeline, and therefore denied the petition as untimely. This is a completely discretionary decision, and there's no review here. The board absolutely did not reach whether there had been ineffective assistance of counsel, because the petitioner did not meet that initial hurdle of showing due diligence. So any discussion of ineffective assistance of counsel in this case is completely unwarranted. It was not reached by the board. It's not before this court today. The main issue here is that this court has said they will not review discretionary denials, including motions to reopen and motions to reconsider. Here, basically, the petitioner is disagreeing with the weight the board placed on the evidence presented and just disagreeing with the board's determination that he didn't exercise due diligence. There is no legal question or constitutional claim presented. As the court has noted today, there is no constitutional right to effective assistance, there are no constitutional claims presented, and there have been no legal questions raised. So if there are no further questions.
Thank you.
She referred to case Jezerski or something. What's your comment on that?
In Jezerski, it involved an untimely motion to reopen, claiming ineffective assistance of counsel, similar to this case. And there the court said they would not exercise jurisdiction because it would be the motion to reopen was a discretionary determination. They talked about ineffective assistance of counsel, saying there was no right to it. Therefore, there were no legal claims or constitutional claims presented. With regard to the prejudice, the court said that any of these determinations, and in that case, the board had said there was no prejudice, and here they said no due diligence, but that is a factual determination. It does not present a legal question, and therefore the court would not have jurisdiction over that motion to reopen. So in a sense, this case is exactly like that case where the court correctly said, according to this circuit's precedent, that there is no jurisdiction over the discretionary denial of a motion to reopen for whatever factual reason the board found to do that. So this court should dismiss this petition, both of these petitions, for lack of jurisdiction, because they just involve discretionary determinations and no legal questions or constitutional claims have been presented.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Scotty, your time has expired, but I'll give you 1 minute for your rebuttal.
One carefully reads the board's decision on the first motion to reopen. It found from the ARDC complaint that the attorney was retained to pursue the appeal. And that is from the ARDC complaint. From that, a motion to reconsider was filed, showing very clearly that what it had looked at before and relied on before was completely different than the conclusions it drew. But let's assume that all motions to reopen, all motions to reconsider, are always discretionary decisions, and there is no review. Where do we go from there? If Congress hasn't specified that this is not subject to review, as it has in 32 other provisions of the Immigration Act, are we going to, by judicial fiat, decide that Section 1252A2B2 applies everywhere? Where does a person go to seek redress in the case of a lawyer that has failed him and has caused him to be deported? I can't imagine that a blanket rule can operate in this court and in this circuit. It should not.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.